say, oh, well, the system will correct itself when it makes these mistakes. But what they're leaving out is that they're supposing some victim actually decides to go to court and has the money to do so. And in the meantime, how many people got stepped on by it? He's not concerned with that. So be prepared to point this out when you hear somebody making that argument. So as a software developer, you're going to have one patent after another come at you. And each time, there will be these three different options, and each one may or may not be available. So sometimes you'll find some option and make it work. And sometimes you'll find no option and your project's dead. The result is that developing software in an environment with software patents is like crossing a minefield. At each step, chances are you're not going to step on a patent. But at each step, at each design decision, you might step on a patent. So while taking just one step isn't terribly dangerous, crossing the whole field becomes very dangerous. Now, people sometimes, software patent advocates sometimes say, well, every other field deals with the patent system, why should you be an exception? This is a stupid question, of course. It's an absurd question. It's like saying, millions of other people get cancer, why should you be an exception? Now, I think that each time some person doesn't get cancer, that's a good thing, right? No matter how many people do, it's still good if you don't. But there is a real question that served as the starting point for the absurdity, and that is, how do fields differ? How does software differ from other fields in a way that is relevant to the effects of the patent system? Because fields do differ from each other very much in how patents affect them. And so I'd like to answer that question. We have a myth of the patent system that for each product there is one patent. People will speak of who is going to get the patent when there is a new product. They're taking for granted this myth. Well, it may have once been true. It may have once been true when products were simpler, and in some fields it's still more true than in others. So fields differ in how products relate to patents. In some fields, you know, pharmaceuticals is at one extreme. The entire chemical formula will be patented. So if you develop a new drug, nobody else has patented that formula. This may be starting to change. There may be starting to be more general patents in pharmaceuticals, but this is how it used to be, at least. So in fields like that, or which are mostly like that, for the most part, if you have designed a new product, you don't face a danger that it's covered by patents that others have. On the other extreme is software, where the products we develop are the most complicated designs made by humanity. And one, you know, for a physical system to have a million different parts, non-repeating, makes it a mega project. I don't think even the space shuttle has a million different parts in it. It may have a million parts total, but that's repeating sub-assemblies. Whereas to make a program that has a million different parts in it means it probably has just a few hundred thousand lines of code, and of course they're non-repeating, and that can be written in a few years by a few people. This is normal in our field. The result is that we find that with a comparatively small amount of design effort, we can produce a design with many different ideas in it and therefore which could be covered by many different patents at once. Look, for instance, at a word processor today. And this is an example you can cite to any layman because they've probably used word processors. Well, word processors today have hundreds of features. Any one of those features could be patented. In fact, one of those features may have multiple ideas in it that could be patented at the same time by different people. So you've got many points of vulnerability. So why is software different from the other fields? The reason is that writing software is fundamentally easier than developing physical systems. Physical systems have to deal with the perversity of matter, and that makes it hard. You can try to make models of of what the matter will do. People are working on that nowadays. But the matter, if the matter doesn't agree with the model, tough luck, because your model was just an attempt to predict it. It's not a definition. But in the software field, we have definitions. We are working with mathematically defined entities that do exactly what they're defined to do. We don't cope with the perversity of matter. Yeah, once in a while a computer breaks and you replace it. We don't have to do anything in software about that. You know, So the result is that there are a whole bunch of considerations we don't have to deal with. If I put an if statement inside a while statement, I don't have to worry that corrosive substances may get in between the two statements and eat away the contact between them. I don't have to worry that the while statement will repeat at such a frequency that they'll vibrate and rub each other away and one of them will break. I don't have to worry that it'll vibrate at such a frequency that it will induce a signal in some other part of the program. I don't have to worry that there will be noise in the variables. I don't have to worry that there will be a voltage drop through the while statement and the if statement will get too low a voltage to work right. I don't have to worry that when I set a variable and then read it, that I'm reading it too fast and the value hasn't been successfully stored yet. I don't have to worry that I've referred to a variable too many times and exceeded the fan-out limit. I don't have to worry that the if statement inside the while statement will generate more heat than can pass through the while statement and it will burn out. I don't have to worry about making sure that if the if statement does burn out, that I can go in and take it out and replace it with a new if statement. And I don't have to worry about the order of assembling all these statements to make each copy of the program either. You know, when you're making physical products, you often have to design a factory to produce the product, which is more complicated than the product itself and costs a lot more. You know, it can cost a lot more than designing the product. Whereas we, to make copies of a program, we type copy. And the same copy command will copy any program. You can't design one factory that will make any product efficiently. Because that's physical stuff. So there are all these problems we don't have to worry about. But the intelligence of software developers, I presume, is about the same as the intelligence of people in all those other fields. So what do? We push to the limit. Given that the field is fundamentally easier, we do bigger things. Then it becomes hard again. That's why, you know, you may have seen people writing about how hard software is to develop. And it might sound like that contradicts what I've said, but there's no contradiction. They're actually talking about something different. I'm talking about the difficulty per unit of complexity of the design, whereas they're talking about the complexity of the gigantic programs that people actually build. Yeah, if you make the problem hard enough, eventually it becomes a challenge again. So in a very difficult field, a small problem can be very challenging to human intelligence. In an easy field like ours, it takes a bigger problem to challenge the same human intelligence. So what does this imply? In another field, the limit of what humans can do is something with this many pieces in it, and where the patent system costs this much, and we're making the factory to produce it cost this much. So for them, the expense of dealing with the patent system is a small fraction. Now, okay, maybe in those fields, maybe it's not a bad thing. Who knows? I'm not an expert in those other fields, and I don't actually have an opinion about whether in most fields, say, automobile engines, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing to have patents. But in the software field, we make something this big, where the patent system is going to affect us this much, and to produce it, we need this much money. So the patent system is a disaster in our field, even if maybe in other fields it might be okay. Now, why does this matter? Supposedly, the purpose of patents is to promote progress. So it has maybe it does some good by encouraging people to publish more ideas. That's the good it's supposed to do. But it also has a cost for society. Now, I don't know whether in the field of automobile engines that benefit exceeds the cost. But I will say that the cost is clearly bigger in software, and the benefits are clearly smaller in software. I've explained to you why the cost, the burden of the patent system is bigger in software. Why is the benefit less? The reason is that in software, you don't usually have to develop an idea. That's a step that is necessary in other fields. You have an idea, and then you may have to spend a lot of time building purely prototype designs to get something that works at all. In software, you generally go from idea to implementing it as one part of a large product. And because of this, the ideas tend to flow as byproducts of having people writing software. So we don't need to go out of our way to encourage people to have ideas. They do have ideas. And then once you've had an idea, then you can implement it as part of the program you're writing. And in fact, the big job of work in software is writing these large programs with the millions of parts and all the details that have to be got right. A system to encourage ideas by burdening the big job is self-defeating. It's assisting something that is not the limiting factor, which is a byproduct of the real work, and this patent system impedes the real work. So we're likely to have less in the way of ideas, not more. In any case, in the other fields, the patents are restrictions on giant factories. And so what? You know, if they don't mind being subject to such a restriction, why should we argue? But in the software field, it's a restriction on every software developer and every computer user, a new form of bureaucracy tying up not only software developers, but every business that uses software. If only all the businesses in Europe were aware of what software patents can do to them, they would be strongly on our side. Paul Heckel, when Apple wasn't very scared of him, started sending threatening letters to Apple's customers. That was really painful for Apple. They might have figured we'll probably beat him in court eventually, but we can't afford to have our customers being scared in the meantime. which means that you as a computer user may get sued or threatened. Unisys was demanding payments from websites that had GIF files on them, saying, do you know that your GIF sites were made with properly licensed software? If you're not sure of that, then we can sue you. They weren't software developers, they were just software users. Every business that uses software should be alarmed about the possibility of software patents. So why is the European Union considering software patents? The pressure comes from two directions, from large companies, the multinationals that expect that they will get mainly the benefit that software, that they will have a lot of patents and they'll be able to make all the rest of us cross-license, and from the patent bureaucrats and patent lawyers who stand to gain always from having more kinds of patents. Why does the patent office want there to be more kinds of patents? Because that enables them to become bigger, to become a bigger bureau with more employees. And not only that, it enables them to make more of a difference in everybody's life. Not a positive difference, but they'll tell themselves it's positive. They will assure themselves as a matter of faith that patents are good for society. And therefore, the more patents control and restrict more areas of life, the more important they can feel. Then there are the patent lawyers. The patent lawyers will say, I'm not biased, I work for defendants also, which is ducking the issue, because the issue is that the more patents there are, the more work there is for them. In the US, a patent law firm has started putting ads up in the airports, which shows how much problems the patent system is causing for people. Now, large companies do various things to try to silence their opposition and mislead people. For instance, there was a fairly large service providing company in France that was going to make a statement against software patents, and then a mega corporation, which often did business with them, said, don't do that, and gagged them. And meanwhile, there's a group called, I think, the Open Forum, which pretends to be speaking for, quote, open source, and which is going around advocating software patents because actually it represents some big companies. So be on the lookout for them and be prepared to expose them. I read that they were closely connected with ICL, among other companies. And they are saying that there should be a mix of, quote, open source, unquote, and proprietary software, which really means they're saying that there should be things we're not allowed to write. So we have to point out that they are actually our enemies, that they don't speak for us, and that they are deceiving the legislators that they speak to. I believe they're having a meeting next week with some members of parliament in the UK. Now, another reason why Europe is considering software patents is that they've been told that having software patents is good for software developers. This is a completely naive picture of how patents affect software. They think, oh, it's a new kind of monopoly that a software developer might be able to get. It has to be good for them. We have to point out the actual dynamics, how software patents affect software development. And they've been told that you mustn't allow Europe to be at a disadvantage, then European companies would be at a disadvantage. So let's look at that. Also is naive. You see, each country has its own patent system that restricts development and distribution of software in that country. But anybody in the world can come and get a patent there. So for instance, right now, Europeans can get US software patents and attack us American programmers in the US. But if Europe rejects software patents, then we Americans will not be able to come to Europe and get European software patents to attack you. So in fact, the country that does not have software patents has an advantage because its citizens at least can be safe at home. By having software patents, the US created a kind of gang warfare in the software field. Just because the US has gang warfare, does Europe want to have it too? Of course, they say the US is in the lead in software development, so software patents must be good. Well, the US was in the lead in software in 1980 when it didn't have software patents. So clearly this is not because of software patents. It's probably just because the US was the richest country and started using a lot of computers sooner. So these are very shallow fallacies that you've got to be prepared to point out. And when it comes to explaining how software patents work to people who don't program, an analogy will work very well. It's the analogy with musical patents. Now, there are no musical patents except perhaps in the US, who knows. But in the US, you could patent almost any kind of thing. Suppose that in the 1700s, the governments of Europe had decided they wanted to promote the progress of symphonic music by establishing musical idea patents. So any idea that could be described in words could have been patented, like a brief melodic motif, you know, too short to be copyrightable, a series of chords, certain instruments playing together, a certain rhythmic pattern, you know. If you could describe it in words, it could be patented. So things go along, and now suppose it's 1800, and you are Beethoven, and you want to write a symphony and not get sued. You're going to find it's harder to write a symphony and not get sued than to write a symphony that sounds good. Now, being the kind of person Beethoven was, you would complain about this. And at that point, the patent holders would say, Beethoven, you're just jealous because we had these ideas first. So instead of trying to steal our ideas, why don't you go think of your own ideas? Of course, this response would have been misleading and false. Beethoven, as it happens, had a lot of new ideas as composers go and used them. But in order to make recognizable music, he had to use known ideas as well. Nobody is such a genius that he can reinvent all of music from nothing, not using any of the musical ideas that are currently being used. If you try, the result is unrecognizable. Pierre Boulez said he would reinvent the language of music, and he tried, and very few people listen. Nobody is such a genius that he can reinvent all of computation from nothing, not using any of the ideas of the last 20 years. Now, the reason why a symphony is a good analogy is because a symphony is big. There's a lot of stuff in a symphony. Many different ideas are used. Of course, they're not just dropped in. An idea is not a set of notes. Writing a symphony using an idea requires writing the notes to embody it. And which notes you use depend on what else is going on in the symphony. They're not the same in two different symphonies that use the same idea. They're not the same notes. So the big job of that of writing a symphony is writing so much and getting it to all work together and be right. It's like the job of writing a program. So use this analogy to help people understand. Our friends in the European Parliament are saying that it's very important now for European academics to write to certain members of Parliament opposing software patents. The battle is heating up. We have a chance of winning. Now, we're not down and out yet. There are a number of people in the European Parliament already opposing it. It's not having clear sailing, but we haven't won yet. So we need your effort, and we need it now. We need you to talk to to talk to people, to academics, explain the issue to them, urge them to read the websites such as ffii.org and programming-freedom.org, and talk with them and urge them to write letters soon. These don't have to be large letters. They don't have to make subtle and erudite arguments. A letter of 20 lines would be fine, something that they could write in a short time. A group of professors writing and signing the same letter can be good too. I expect FSF Europe will post the list of members of Parliament that these letters should be sent to. So, at this point, I'm essentially done, but I was asked to remind you that there is a free software contest in which you could enroll your free software project, and that there is information at the FSF booth. So, and the deadline is February 15th. So if you have a project that you think might be good to register for the contest, go take a look there.
The lunch break was planned between 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. If you want to ask questions to Richard, it's okay for me, but we start the other session at 2 p.m. So if you want to eat something, it's maybe the time to do now. Thank you. Boring day. I hope not. Now, like you know, we accepted donations to support the event because, like I said this morning, this is entirely organized by volunteers, but it costs money. And we would like the community to be the real base of the event. And accepting donation is one of the way to do that. But the community needs a little of incentive. So we distributed t-shirts, and we also had some magazine subscriptions to give away to donators. So all donators participated in that, maybe without knowing it. And we had what we had to offer is 10 subscriptions to Linux Magazine France for people from Belgium and France, 2 subscriptions to Todo Linux in Spain, 2 international subscriptions to Linux Format UK, 15 subscriptions to Linux Magazine UK, 15 international subscriptions, and 6 Linux Mag Netherlands subscriptions for people in Belgium and the Netherlands. So I will give you the name of those people. If you hear your name, we will contact you. I'm just giving the names fast so you know it's already fixed and we don't trick on it. So Linux Format UK International, Jeff Verheyen from Belgium and Michael Loaec from France. Linux Magazine UK International, Pascal Tergeon, France, Bill Barton, UK, Fabrice Moons, NL, Netherlands, Jean-Michel Bruet, France, Germain Chazot, France, Franck Gobert, Belgium, Heike Justic, Deutschland, Marc Wiesland, Jérôme Arek, France, Kevo van Gelder,
Netherlands. Bert De Meyer, Belgium. Jeroen Batten, Netherlands. Erwin Bolwit, Netherlands. Paul Cupis, UK. Dean Wilson, UK. Linux Magazine, France. Chris Gray, Comens Arnaud, Brad Knowles, Guillaume Plessis, Joël Chamoulon, Henri Frédéric, Philippe Biondi, Boris Dax, Joran Benjamin, Linux Mac, Netherlands, Tom Kuhlman, Ivan van der Sanden, Vincent Pattington, Tom Mercelis, Bart Orbans, Kim Brunings. And for our Spanish friends, I don't know if they are here, but Raúl Jover and Guillermo Grande. So all those people get a 1-year subscription to the respective magazine. Now, there was also a little competition for people donating 150 euros or more. There was one winner who has the opportunity to choose 4 books at the O'Reilly stand, and that is Edouard Etienne. I don't know if he's here, but he's been, I've seen him every edition of the FOSDEM. So congratulations, Etienne. Trying to not making last too long, but one more prize for FOSDEM backgrounds. I don't know if you knew it. We organized FOSDEM-based backgrounds for graphics, and we have a prize. We have a big prize. We have a big prize. I hope it will be useful to the winner. It's a draw pad, graphical digital draw pad. Sorry, and the winner is Fabien Fauchet, who is there. Hello, Fabien. Here it is.
Thanks a lot.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
See you next year. Now, you know, we have a little tradition here at the FOSDEM. Each year, so, Richard is ready to sing with me the free software song, and I'll give him the microphone because he's singing very much better. I propose we all sing together because I put the lyrics on there. Please sing with us. Don't be ashamed.
Please raise your hands if you cannot hear me. I've suddenly gone dumb. Anyway, before we sing this song, I think it will help if I get you accustomed to the rhythm. This melody is a Bulgarian folk dance tune, and it has a rhythm that people in Western Europe are not very used to. It's a rhythm of 7. Clap with me. Not so fast. No, no. One, two, three, one, two, one, two, one, two, three, one, two, one, two. Okay. Now I think we can sing it. I will clap 2 measures and then start in. Join us now and share the software. You'll be free. Hackers, you'll be free.
join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hackers, you'll be free. Hoarders can get piles of money, that is true, hackers, that is true. But they cannot help their neighbors, that's not good, hackers, that's not good. When we have enough free software at our call, hackers at our call, we'll kick out those dirty licenses evermore, hackers evermore. Join us now and share the software, you'll be free, hackers, you'll be free. Join us now and share the software, you'll be free, hackers, you'll be free.
Libère-toi, hacker, libère-toi. Rejoins-nous, partage le logiciel. Libère-toi, hacker, libère-toi. J'ai oublié le reste en français.
Wow, that was great.
Those of you who got those free subscriptions to these magazines that say they're about Linux, please write to them and say, please stop calling the whole system Linux. And that magazine, which goes even further and calls itself Todo Linux, please write and say, que Linux no es todo.
Okay, one last point. The other years, we tried to organize something the Saturday evening. It didn't work quite well. So this year, we promised ourselves, if we organize something, it must be something really good. And that was not possible. So we decided not to organize anything this evening. I propose you go in Brussels Centrum. You have a lot of place to get something to eat, to party. It's the best thing to do this evening. Now I will pass the microphone to Georg from FSF Europe. He has some things to say.
Okay, I hope you can hear me. It is my honor and pleasure to welcome you to this Free Software Foundation Award ceremony, which is by now a tradition, and we are once again glad that it's held in Europe. Now, I do know that the award winner is here, and I would like to say a few words about him, but I should not, because my job right now is to announce a person who doesn't really need announcing, especially after this, you know, very traditional and stylish beginning of the evening that we just had. So it is now my pleasure to introduce, even though he doesn't need an introduction, Richard Stallman, Mr. St. Lucius.
free software movement has always been more than just technical. The work, of course, is largely technical work, writing software, writing a wide range of different programs. But behind and underneath that work has always been an ethical and social and political goal, the goal of freedom to cooperate, freedom to treat each other decently, freedom to live together in an ethical society. Geeks tend to forget about anything that's not technical. They like to bury themselves in technical work, and there's even a danger that they may start to forget about ethical issues in life. You'll even find them sometimes saying, "Don't pollute this technical discussion by talking about the social consequences." It's as if everything that society learned 50 years ago in the aftermath of nuclear weapons about how technology should be thought about in society had been turned upside down. And because of this, we have a need constantly to focus on the ethical aspects of free software, even for people whose 95% of whose work is writing code. Today, the free software movement has become perhaps the largest social movement, with 500,000 people around the world actively contributing, with tens of millions benefiting from it. It's starting to influence ideas and thinking in other areas as well. And so it's important to realize that the Free Software Award doesn't have to go to a person for writing an important program. It can also go to a person who has contributed to thinking ethically about free software. And therefore, I would like to give the Free Software Award to Professor Lawrence Lessig. Uh-oh, it's been so carefully and well packed that we're now having an embarrassing delay in our ceremony. Please, everybody, start thinking frantically to cover up this delay. So now I'd like you to give a speech.
I'd like that. Thank you very much. So I am more grateful than I could say for this award. I've had a bit of a losing streak. I was appointed by a judge to help him decide whether Microsoft was a monopolist, and Microsoft got me kicked off the case. I was asked by a bunch of people to run to be on the board of ICANN, and I lost that race. And just last month, the Supreme Court listened to our challenge to Congress's 11th extension of copyrights and said, "I'm sorry, Lessig, your name is loser." Lessig, loser. 7-2, we lost that constitutional challenge. Now, in that loss, I learned something. We had appealed to a document, which to Americans is extremely important, a document that says that Congress's power is the power to promote the progress of science. It doesn't say intellectual property anywhere in that document. It says promote the progress of science. by securing for limited times to authors exclusive right to their writings, for limited times. Congress, filled with a bunch of lawyers, people I make for a living, right, thought, limited times. Well, what does limited times mean? Limited times means after they've granted you a copyright, they have the right to extend it as many times as they want, so long as each extension is a limited times. This is a perpetual term on the installment plan. And so this idea has defined copyright in the United States for the last 40 years. 11 times in the last 40 years, copyright terms have been extended. Now, the reason these terms get extended is because of a little mouse, Mickey Mouse. This is the Mickey Mouse Protection Act, repeatedly extending the terms of copyright. But because these terms get extended, terms that are extended to protect just 2% of creative work, 98% of the creative work, which is otherwise not being exploited, otherwise unpublished, otherwise lying fallow, is locked up by this legal system. The ability of people to cultivate their culture, to put a web page up that talks about the New Deal, to put a web page up that talks about those World War II, that has images or texts or sounds from World War II, is not allowed unless you get permission from people who have been dead for 50 years. This is the craziness of a system that is guided by corporate interests who have just 2%, their 2% in mind. And they have repeatedly captured the political process. So we went to the legal process and we thought, we have a principle and an ideal. And we lined up a case that said, when it said limited times, it meant limited times. It's obvious. Anybody understands what this means? You get your copyright and that's the end. And the work passes into a public domain so other people can build upon it. That was the ideal. And we brought a case, and on the other side, the government got 30 briefs filed by the 30 largest publishers and media companies and richest, most powerful people in the United States. And on our side of the case, we of course had a brief from the Free Software Foundation. But in addition to a brief by sensible people like the Free Software Foundation, we even had lunatics on our side, right? So Phyllis Schlafly, a right-wing lunatic, filed a brief on our side that said, yes, the Constitution means what it says. 17 economists, including 5 Nobel Prize winners, including Milton Friedman, Ronald Coase, James Buchanan, Kenneth Arrow, these people who are not known for their lefty thoughts, all signed a brief saying this extension makes no sense. Milton Friedman said he would only sign it if the brief said no brainer somewhere in the brief. So this was a movement that ran across political perspective. From people who typically think about property and money to people who typically think about freedom. All of these people were on a side that said there should be a limit so that culture can be free, so people can build upon culture, free culture. The Supreme Court, 7-2, said we were wrong. Said that Congress has the power to extend copyrights as many times as they want, as long as they do it in limited times chunks. This power will go on. There will be not a single piece of copyrighted material that will pass into the public domain in the United States until 2019. Just at the time when this technology gives us the chance to build the Library of Alexandria that could spread knowledge around the world, just at the time when a technology gives people the ability to build culture, to take and produce and to share, as Apple Company says, to rip, mix, and burn our culture, just at the time the technology you have given this to us, we, the lawyers, have taken that right away from you. And that is constitutional, they say. Now, when I lost this case, one of the chief lobbyists from the other side, lobbyists are decent sorts, he was a decent sort, said to me, you have to understand, there was all the money in the world on one side of this case, and all you had was ideals and principles. When is the last time ideals and principles won over all the money in the world? And he's right. When is the last time? When is the last time a movement stood based on these ideals and had the power and force to overcome all the money in the world. When is the last time this organization is the last time? What this movement did, what Richard Stallman began, what this movement is doing, what the free software movement stands for is exactly the opportunity for ideals and principles to stand up against all the money in the world and win, and you are winning. But your victory in this important sphere has got to be carried outside of just technology, because there's no such thing as just technology anymore. This technology is our social life, and the freedoms that you have been defending and building in this sphere, we need outside of this sphere. You need free software, we need free culture. Free culture, the same ideals. Now, there'll be people who run around who say, well, free culture makes people a lot of money, and that's why it's a good idea. But the lesson this loss teaches me is that when Richard Stallman has been standing up for the past 150 years, internet time, saying that it's ideals and principles that should define this movement, he and this movement have won because we've only had ideals and principles. So from this loss, let us please build on your victory to carry this movement for freedom outside of technology into culture, so that again, there will be a time where the freedom that defined a tradition that was our past can win over all the money in the world. This victory, this small victory that would be accomplished if these ideals could win, would be the most important victory that ideals have seen in 100 years. And you can teach us, as I have learned the most important lessons about how these principles win, by learning from you, and especially from the founder of this movement, Richard. So I'm grateful that you would allow me to stand with you here in this movement, a movement where you're right. All we have are ideals and principles, and eventually that's all we will need. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this inspired speech. In fact, I find it's quite hard to find words after the ones you've spoken. And I don't want to pile unimportant ones on the ones you just gave us. So from one geek to another, in a way, as we said before the award, geeks love t-shirts. So
wonderful.
This is the t-shirt that has one document, or rather the preamble of one document on its back that is extremely meaningful to all of us. In fact, if you count digital copies, more copies of this exist than of the Bible. And so I would like to give this to you as a really small and not all, you know, compensating gift, but a little symbol for your standing up for freedom and the work you do, and you're getting up even if you lose, and you're not losing your inspiration and your power to work for freedom. And I hope that it inspired all of you as much as it inspired me. And that's all I have to say, and close the Free Software Foundation Award ceremony. Thank you.
So after that, I do not dare say a word. So I pass the microphone to Richard. I just want to say, when Richard has finished, we have finished our work here, so we can go out in Brussels. Thank you.
Just wanted to mention that we have cards here that you can use to become an associate member of the FSF. So if you want them, take them.